Hello, and welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview entrepreneurs, developers, business owners, entrepreneurship, entrepreneurs, and of course, game changers.
Amen. Like that one.
Someone that has, you know, who I met a couple months ago with another client. He definitely had a great first impression. David Octavio Gundel, two-time cancer survivor and TEDx speaker.
Come on.
Welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. Appreciate your time. We are here in Western Florida. I don't come here that often. This is a great time to get out of South Beach and get up north. So really grateful for the opportunity and just grateful to hear, you know, how this interview is going to take place with you and how you do your podcast and how you bring it to the public. So I'm really excited about that.
Dave, you know, you're very experienced. Of course, not only, you know, you also you're also a speaker. As
yes,
well,
correct.
And also a host. So you've done, you know, beyond podcasts. You're like with live audiences. tell me a little bit. About yourself and your story.
So, my cancer story or my life story?
Let's start from if you could bunch your life and cancer together.
Got it. Okay,
let's do it.
So originally, I'm from Puerto Rico. I was born in Santurce, Puerto Rico. I went to Lincoln Military Academy. Both of my parents were in the Army. My dad served in the Korean War, and my mom served in the Vietnam War. My mom was a captain in the Army. Both of them came from education. Both of them came from great families. So my grandparents, I was able to meet, thank God, my mom's parents, and then my grandmother from my dad's side. I never got a chance to meet my grandfather from my dad's side, but I heard great things about him. Very humble man. So long story short, I was raised in a private school where I was able to really flourish because of my parents. And that military school also taught me a lot about not just education. I also learned English as a first language. All my classes were in English and except Spanish class. So from there, it took me into a position also of being able to be obedient and also be like my father used to do like this, give me the finger, like the, not the that finger, but for the podcast viewers, but just like the second finger, just pointing up, like straighten up.
All your advertisements has that.
If I ever, well, no, this was what my father used to do to me, like straighten up.
Oh, okay.
The other finger on my cancer picture is me being grateful. So if I take a picture with you today, I'm gonna point up. And what I'm doing is I'm basically saying, thank you God for this moment and for this person in my life. So it's almost a gratitude thing when I take a picture. Now, people don't know what that means if they don't know my story. So if they've never seen the cancer pictures, they have no idea. They think, oh, he's just saying number one. It has nothing to do with me. It actually has to do with me being grateful. But yeah, so I was taught, you know, discipline. I was taught a lot of that, especially military school, of course. And went to the San Antonio, Texas, and culture shock altogether.
From
Puerto Rico to the States, period. Now, I had traveled the States. I had gone to Disney World since I was five and Busch Gardens and, you know, Tampa, Orlando, whatever. That's why I ended up in Florida, I think. But we ended up in Texas. My mom was the head of the department for the university, from UTSA to UTA to Tarleton State University.
So go Longhorns.
She liked Texas. But the really cool thing about that part of my story was being able to have the privilege of sitting in the back of the room while my mom was teaching. And it's funny because it didn't really come through full circle until after I passed college, went to work, and then got into the entrepreneurship and, you know, speaking world and all that stuff. And that story came back in my head. It's funny how life is, you know, you always go back to your past. But watching my mom control a room, not just with energy, but with also education, and the way the students reacted to my mother. Same thing with my father. My father was able to control rooms in a very, they're both speakers in their own individual way.
Your DNA came from both.
Yeah.
Like your speaking DNA.
Correct. But I never wanted, this is not what I wanted to do though. I love talking. Yeah. One thing is talking. Everybody that knows me, I'm a great talker. I could talk all day. But the difference is you could talk, but can you make an impact? And of course, my whole life was about health and wellness, health and fitness, gyms, health clubs. Now, I was double major, so I a bachelor's in marketing management and speech comm. So the speech communication, they had to make me speak. You know, that was the thing. I have to speak, not just talk. Now I had to speak to a room and make something out of nothing. You know, teacher's like, okay, here you go. Here's your topic and roll, right?
How were you back then? Were you kind of good or you were kind of
I was good shy. At just talking around. So like, you know, like when you like, you know, you don't know the subject, but then you're going to talk about it anyway, like you know it. So I would make something out of nothing and I still didn't make the point. But so my teacher was like, that was great, David. You had our attention for the whole time, but you didn't answer the question because I didn't know the answer. So I didn't know the answer. So I was just like, oh, I didn't know how to relate to what she gave me, the topic. So what was interesting about it is at that moment, Toastmasters was a big deal. Like at that moment, like Toastmasters was like internships, business consultants and sales and management. They were all looking for people that were in Toastmasters. Now, I know a lot of people don't know about Toastmasters now, but back then it was huge. Now, if you go to Toastmasters now, it's even better because they have all the education online so you can learn and practice and do all that stuff. But back then it was just only a few people and only a few chapters. They were very, very, like TED Talk. They're very, very private about their, you know, their chapters. So, but I was in college, major in marketing management, speech comm. I was able to create, we were able to create a chapter at USF. And that is when I said, okay, now I'm going to speak, but I wasn't really a good speaker. I was just a good talker. Remember that. So Toastmasters was good because it made me work on actually when I went to speak about health and wellness now, I was more rehearsed. I was more polished. I was able to do more because of Toastmasters because now as the president, you're like, okay, people are looking up to you to learn, so I better learn. And I better, you know, practice more. Now, remember, I was also a host. I was hosting fitness shows at very early age. I was also in theater. I was also acting, modeling, doing a lot of stuff since I was 16. So in front of people, I'm fine. But to make an impact, that was the one thing I always wanted to make. So I had to learn a lot. But Toastmasters taught me a lot about
that. You think that's talent or can someone learn that?
I think the gift is the fact that you have a voice is a gift. The talent comes from something that you know that you can actually practice at and be good at. So in other words, Stephen Curry from, you know, one of my favorite players now. Why? People want to say how great he is, but what I would like to watch is I want to watch all the hours that he's practicing for him to dribble the way he does, for him to do that kind of stuff. So it takes time and it takes a lot. So you have to continue to put yourself in the middle of it. It's almost like I tell people, just go, you want to speak? Go practice. Go find places to speak. And that's what I liked about Toastmasters. Then fraternity. I was president of my fraternity, Pi Sigma Epsilon. And then, of course, from there, I was in, you know, Business College Council. So everything, I wanted to be in everything. So the one good thing is I had this thing that I wanted to push myself to be a leader in whatever I did. But that also brought a lot of responsibility and a lot of pressure. So, again, I always feel like God was preparing me for the battle for cancer. All these pressure, anxiety, nervousness, everything that I had to face, even though it wasn't a life sentence at the time, it felt like it because 19, 20, 21 years old, you think a final is the end of the world, and it isn't. If you fail the final, you can take it again, yeah. Right? But there's a lot of things in life that you can't take over. You can't do-overs. You know, it's already done. So those are the things that I've learned through this process. Everything about my life, I'm just looking for that learning. I'm looking for the lesson.
Yeah. You know? So tell us about your cancer story. You've been on, you know, several TV shows throughout the past. I know it's impacted your life, and it's still impacting other people right now. So tell us that story.
Yeah, I graduate from college, get into management. I run health clubs. I become a business consultant. I opened studios for clients. I ran Gold's Gyms. That was one of my biggest things in my career. I was able to run, I think it was 9 Gold's Gyms or 10 altogether throughout my career. I ended up, the last one was in South Beach, of course. The last one, 2012, that I walked away from the career, from that career. But in 2004, I was at managing Gold's Gym in Deerfield Beach, and I remember feeling a lump in January of that year. And I'm a health freak. I don't do drugs. I barely drink. I have never smoked a cigarette, anything in my life. I don't take drugs. I don't do steroids or anything like that. I was modeling. I was 6 feet tall, 170 pounds, whatever it was. Long hair, running a gym. And I feel a lump, and all of a sudden, the fear of cancer. Because now I had felt the fear of my grandmother had passed away of cancer after my grandfather passed away. And I also knew a little bit about cancer because I was in that industry where I was always going to schools and speaking to kids about cancer, diabetes, heart attack, and obesity. Those are the four things that we always bring up, right? So as a trainer, I would go to schools and talk about it. As a manager of a gym, I would go to schools and talk to teachers about it, and also go to businesses. And that's how I was able to get a lot of my corporate memberships, because I was able to donate my time to speak, give them a message, and at the same time recruit people to come to my health club, especially CEOs, managers, or whatever. That made me successful because of my speaking. I just didn't know how it was going to turn out, right?
Things are coming together.
Exactly. It's all like I always tell people, just let the process work. But you have to make sure you show up. And, you know, like my friend Gary, and I always tell him, you show up, God shows off. You know, you never know how, but you have to show up. And so I'm 29 years old in August of 2004. And I finally made, and my birthday was July 18th, I finally make that appointment. Now it took me 6-7 months. Remember, I felt a lump in January. It took me 6-7 months to actually make an appointment. And my birthday, I made the appointment, and it was August, I believe it was August 10th or 9th of that month. And the doctor put me with a neurologist to look at my case. And on Friday the 13th, 2004, the words that I was really literally like running away from, I already knew it though. Like when I tell you, Santiago, I already knew I had cancer the whole time, all 7 months, I knew it. I could try to deny it. It's a hernia. It's this, it's that, it's whatever.
How'd you know? Like, what was...
Just an intuition.
Okay.
You know, one thing, when you talk about faith or spirituality, whatever anybody believes in, you know, one thing that I talk about all the time is that you have a few gifts that you don't even use, and they're daily. One is intuition. We all have an intuitive feeling about... This guy's not good for us. This girl's good, not good for you. This job is not good for you. This job is. You have an intuition. We just don't follow it sometimes. We think we know better. And the other one is making decisions and choices. We all make choices every day. When people say, I don't have time. You have time. You made a choice to do something with that time. That was your choice. That was your decision. Oh, but I have to go to work. No. You made a decision to go to work. Now, your brain tells you have to go to work because of whatever A, B, and C, whatever reason you have. But you have a choice and you have a decision. You don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock. You can wake up at 8 if you want to. Now, are there consequences, Santiago? Absolutely, there's consequences. What I'm saying is that we all have choices and decisions. And sometimes the harder the decision, the better the result. And that is what I have found out in my life. Is that test after test after test, I was always tested in my life. The youngest manager, youngest regional manager, youngest this, blah, blah, blah. Nobody really gave me, you know, oh, you don't have a background in this, this is what you do, or you're just a kid, or you're just, that's fine. But for some reason, what it did for me is what, it was a challenge. Now at 29 years old, that challenge of cancer, I was never, ever expecting because I'm healthy. I look great, I'm ripped, I'm working out every day, I'm eating good, I'm doing whatever. All of a sudden, here comes this word, cancer. I blacked out for the first time in my life. Now, I played sports my whole life, you know, from baseball, basketball, football, whatever. I never blacked out. I've gotten hit many times, but I never blacked out. And as soon as they said that, within seconds, I was given blood. The lady, the nurse was taking my blood, and I blacked out. And all I remember was the two nurses trying to wake me up. And I already knew I had cancer, but yet when the doctor says you have cancer, that's a different story. Because we look at a doctor as an authority, right? So long story short, Friday the 13th, Monday the 16th was my surgery, just like that.
Wow.
I called my parents for the first time. They didn't know. So they came down, and on Monday they were there. Early surgery, outpatient surgery, removed the tumor. And they told me, oh, great news. We think we removed everything. We didn't see any signs of cancer anywhere else. So I'm thinking, okay, great, they did it. But they wanted still to do chemo and whatever. I said, well, let's just wait. Let's just wait to see the results. So long story short, it was encapsulated. They said, we don't see any signs, anything. There is no sign of cancer in your body. None of my exams came back as cancer. It was just in the tumor, was encapsulated. So what I told them was, okay, let's do this. Let's just do continuous checkups. And for the next 2 years, I did the checkups. But what happened was God woke me up. So when people say, well, you know, you have a great relationship with God, you're right, I have a great relationship with God now. I didn't have a great relationship with God then. I believe in God. I believe that God exists. I didn't have a relationship with God. In other words, God is right there. He's in the passenger seat. Or he's in the back seat sometimes. And I thank him for a lot of things. But I wasn't speaking to God about, what about my life? So when people always say, well, how come you have a... It's about, stop thinking about, someone that you're going to worship. So just start thinking about what it is that your life has meaning. What is the meaning for your life? Start thinking that way. Stop thinking about this and that or gods or just start thinking about, why am I alive? What is my destiny? What is my meaning? And do I have a purpose? And why is it that I was speaking at such a young age? Why is it that I was in front of crowds at 19, 20 years old hosting the biggest shows in the country? Why is it that I had those opportunities? Now, yeah, I had to step forward and own them. But at the same time, there were opportunities a lot of people don't get, Santiago. A lot of people don't get those opportunities. But for some reason, I was showing up and I got these opportunities.
Yeah.
So those 2 years, I started speaking again. I had stopped speaking. I went back to the school systems. I went back to the businesses. But now I had a purpose. Now I was a cancer survivor. But really, all I had was surgery.
Right.
Right? I didn't have to go through. I didn't lose my hair. I didn't lose all that stuff. But the interesting thing is I started doing fundraisers. I have pictures with a tiger. I had a tiger to my gym, and we did pictures with a tiger, a cub. But like literally, he opened his mouth, and he would have bite your
Yeah,
I had a trainer with him. But we did art auctions for American Cancer Society. I started doing all the walks. Like, you have no idea. I was praying every day. I say, why, God, why me? What did I do? What happened? And long story short, the why me became why not me. It became, okay, why do you think you're so charismatic? Why do you think you want to be in front of people? Why do you think you were a DJ and a host and in theater and debate? And why do you think all these things you were? There has to be a purpose. There has to be a reason. So when I look at people, I want to know their story. If you talk to anyone that knows me, that I meet on Instagram or Facebook or anything, what I talk about is, tell me your story. That's all I care about. I don't care about dating. I don't care about what you do for work. That's fine. Great. Congratulations. Whatever you do. I'm not interested in working for you or you working for me. What I want to know is, what is your story? Because then what your story will do is reveal your purpose. Cancer was a blessing in my life because it gave me something that I never had before. Every single day I get to witness miracles. Now, it might not be the miracle in the Bible that, someone is crippled and I get to, stand them up and they get to walk. The miracle is I get to see people live their purpose. I get to see people realize that their potential is tied to their purpose, that their passion is tied to what they're supposed to do. So that to me is like a miracle. My friend Gary that I talk about all the time, he's one of my right hands, left hands. He hosts my women's conferences now. But he was just a guy that, he was the president of Toastmasters in Miami. That's how we connected. And he used to ask me to come show up. And I'm like, why am I speaking at Toastmasters all over again? And what it led to, it was what? Perfecting my speaking. It was challenging me, even to the point that he was challenging me. He was bringing other speakers in to challenge me so I would step up my game. But what I figured out is, okay, I used to do this for myself. Now what am I doing it for? It's a greater purpose, right? So now, in July 11th, I celebrate 14 years cancer-free. And to a lot of people, it's like, wow, that's a long time. Yeah, it is. But you have to remember this. I feel like it's not just about being cancer-free. I feel like I've had 14 years of a bonus life. And there's so many people that I've met in the last 14 years that I would have never met that have become such an impact in my life. Because when people say, well, David, you're such a blessing in my life, I said, yeah, but you're a blessing in mine. How do I bless you? I said, because you're doing exactly what God showed me, and you're a confirmation of the reason I met you. In other words, if I share a word with you, or some kind of epiphany, or some kind of, you know, prayer with you, and it comes to pass, what am I doing? I'm watching confirmations. I'm watching affirmations. I'm witnessing miracles happen because you weren't doing that before. All of a sudden, my story gave you what? Hope. And that's why my message has always been, find hope, have faith, live with purpose. So the 2 years go by, 2006 comes up, I get re-diagnosed with cancer. I hosted Fitness Universe in June, 600 competitors. I did both days with cancer. The last show, the Muscle Mania, I wasn't able to host it. I was in my bed in the hotel room, cradled up like a little baby because I was in so much pain. July comes up, I go see Mark Anthony in concert. If I'm dying, I'm going to go out doing what I love to do. So, and August comes in, and what happened was, Santiago, I told God, I said, okay, if this is it, I want to live the summer. Now, I had the pain, the cancer was growing, but I was still working out, I was still going to work. The first week of August of 2006, there's a fashion show in Orlando, which I was part of every year. And that fashion show was one of the biggest bridal shows in the country. And what happened was, I said, I'm gonna do it. What people didn't know is that I had cancer. Nobody knew. Now, the show was tuxedos. So I was able to, even though my stomach was distended, I was able to just tighten up the vest and then put the jacket on and walk the stage. Now, the cool thing is, I have pictures of that show. You can't tell I'm sick. I had makeup on, my hair was in a ponytail, I had my tuxedo on. You couldn't tell I was sick. But I left the stage to change, and I was in so much pain I could barely walk. But yet I was walking the runway. There's sometimes, you know, when people say, oh, this guy lifted up a car because somebody was underneath, right? That's how I felt, just walking. Being able to walk was a miracle. I finished the show. I told the people, that the producers and everybody, I have cancer. I'm going into treatment. But I hope next year you save a spot for me because I'll be back. Now, did I really believe those words? I don't know. At the time, I can't really say. I did believe I was going to live, but I needed more confirmation. So I ended up in the hospital that next Tuesday. That Friday, I was given a death sentence. So literally 2 days later, I'm in the emergency room in Boca Raton, Florida. On Friday, I'm basically being told I'm on morphine. Oh,
wow. That's like the last...
That's the last straw.
Last straw, yeah.
No doctor wanted to take my case. Nobody answered the call. And then right before the midnight hour, Pasquale Benedetto from Sylvester Cancer calls my oncologist and says, what are you doing with him? Nothing. We already started the morphine drip. Send him to Jackson Memorial tonight. I'm gonna try something. Yeah.
Now, were you aware?
I'm on morphine.
Oh.
So the only thing cool about morphine is that you don't really feel pain,
right?
But you're also goofy. And I'm already a goofy person as it is. So I'm like making jokes. I'm doing all kinds of stuff.
You were staying positive.
Oh, well, I wasn't even thinking. I was like, where am I going? So this is a true joke, and it's a fact. I was on the ambulance going south on 95 South, And there's a club named Space. Everybody, a lot of people in Miami know there was a club named, I don't know if they're still there. I don't know, after the pandemic. But anyway, so Club Space was there. But and when I used to DJ, I used to come down to Miami and I used to go to Space and either DJ or just hang out. And what was interesting was that I'm driving 95 South and I see the sign on the ambulance, 95 South. And I'm telling the, I don't know, EMT or the ambulance, and I say, are we going to Club Space? Like, I'm just having fun all the way home, all the way down.
You're out of it.
So I'm out of it. I get there, but I remember these things later when I start going through my story and sharing my story. That's why I was told, the more you share, the more you remember. So long story short, I get to the hospital. I tell my girlfriend at the time, I said, listen, I need paper. And I put in I found out who he was. I put Dr. Benedetto, David is here. And I taped the two pieces of paper, and you know how big those hospital doors are. And it was I left it open, and I put the piece of paper on top of the frame. Who does that? Like, I'm dying of cancer, I'm on morphine, I just landed in a new hospital, and I'm putting two pieces of paper taped on the door to let the doctor know that I'm here.
Wow.
These are the things that this is the Davis stuff. So I come up and all of a sudden he walks in, he takes the paper down and he walks in. It was after midnight. He's doing rounds. And I meet him and he says, you're in uncharted waters. We don't know what we're doing. We're going to try something. And when he was interviewed by the Miami Herald, that's exactly what he said. We are in uncharted waters. We're going to try something. So the next 3 weeks were like a blur. They did all these exams on me, put a camera down my throat. I had 7 liters of fluid in my stomach distended. They pulled all that stuff out, and they started chemo immediately. I woke up 3 weeks later at 124 pounds. My muscle was gone. My hair was all falling out. I was a toothpick, yellow color, green color.
That picture you sent me. Yeah.
And I go from there, and I end up going home. He's like, we're going to start round two. You're still alive. Remember, I was given 3 days to live. I'm 3 weeks past that.
I was going to say, three weeks.
So now I lost 50-something pounds, right. But I'm still alive.
Right.
I go home. He says, I don't know if you'll come back for round two, but if you do, we're going to start in 5 days. This cancer is extremely aggressive. The cancer was covering all my organs upside, like it's a Christmas tree upside down. All the organs were covered. You could not see one organ from my pelvic region to my chest. So for them, it's like, how is he still alive? So I come in, and I go home. I shave my head. I had to almost cry to get somebody to take that picture. Because I something inside me say, take this picture. This will be your testimony picture. This will be what people will see that will show the miracle that God was getting ready to do in my life. So I took all the energy I had. I got up on the couch, pointed up at God, smiled, and took the picture. And now if you Google my name, that's the picture that's everywhere.
Which is a very powerful picture.
And you wouldn't believe I went through that if I don't take that picture. Right? If I came to you and said, well, you met me at your client's office, and I said, I'm a two-time cancer survivor, and you see me, you would not believe me.
No, you looked healthy.
And that was just one picture. Now, I took other pictures, but they're not as powerful because on that picture, not only am I tested, I'm literally saying, I'm making the promise to God, God heal me, I'll tell your story until the whole world hears. Amen. So I make that promise, pointed up at God, and I smiled. After that, everything else was, now let's go fight. What happened that day, Santiago, was that I had a vision, a dream, whatever you want to call it, of me being on stage with short hair, like I have now. And on stage with a suit with my name in the back. And that picture was what gave me hope. That's why I always say to my conference, don't dream your life, live your dreams, my keynote speeches. Because your visions and your dreams is what's supposed to give you hope to keep going. So you got to keep dreaming. You got to keep believing in those dreams. So I have this hope that one day I'm going to be back on stage, hosting, speaking. I don't even know what I'm doing. Just I know I'm going to be on stage with short hair. I haven't had short hair since I was 16 years old. So in other words, For me to be, for that picture to come to pass, that means I was what? Surviving. I would have had to survive cancer for that picture to come true. So August 25th, I took the picture. August 25th, 2019, that vision came to life. On a stage in Orlando at the Discover Your Beauty fashion show, I'm on stage, blue background, and my name in letters, David Octavio Gandel. The reason I changed all my branding from David Gandel, David Octavio Gandel, is because everything I saw was David Octavio Gandel. So I said, I'm gonna go in faith and change everything. Why? Because I saw my name in lights, and that vision came to pass 13 years to the date. That was August 25th, 2019. 13 years to the date, I finally see the vision that gave me hope all those years.
Man, the timing.
No, God's timing is always perfect. We're the ones that were late. We're either early or late, but he's always on time. But the difference was that picture, through 7 rounds of chemo, gave me hope that I was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Those 7 rounds, we don't have enough time to talk about all the pain and all the suffering that I went through. But the cool thing was that my scripture is Philippians 4:13. I would say I could do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And what was interesting about that scripture was that I needed God's strength. And there came a time after my 3rd round that I said, okay, God, doctors are doing their part. You still kept me here. What do I need to do? And I woke up that day, and I put my workout clothes on, and I was waiting for my friend Betty, who was one of my assistants at the gym, to cook for me, because she was the one that come in the morning, cook for me, make sure I was alive. And I said to her, we're going to the gym. And she's like, no, we're not.
You can't do this.
I said, no, I'm going to the gym. I said, David, you don't have to work right now. Oh, no, I'm going to work out. And she says, you're 120, I was 128 pounds. I said, you're 100 and nothing pounds. You have no strength. You could barely walk, and you want to go work out. I said, I prayed about it. I'm going to work out. Just with the same attitude. I'm talking to you. She's going to be in my documentary, in my book, and all that stuff. But it was interesting because she's like, no, you're not doing it. So she's like, I got your keys. I said, you can have my keys. I have another set. So when you leave, do you want me to drive a car that I haven't driven in months? And I never drove a car like this at 128 pounds, so I don't even know my strength.
Yeah.
Do you want me to drive the car, or do you want to drive with me? Which one do you want to take? Because I'll find the other key. When you leave, I'll go drive. I'll see you at the gym. Do you want to help me, or do you want me to go by myself? Wow. So she helped me. I lasted 5 minutes. But I worked out. And Santiago, what it was physical pain. It was pain that I felt before. And it was pain that made me feel alive. So I always tell people, if you're feeling pain, that's not a bad thing. That means you're alive.
Which you took a step of faith.
Correct. Well, yeah, because I said, okay, God, you're doing your part. The doctors are doing theirs. I'm still alive. It's been already over a month and a half, I think. I'm still here. So why do I have to do something. You know, when people say, well, you can pray. Yeah, you can pray and sit home and do nothing, and nothing's going to happen. You have to step out in faith. You have to do something. So I went to the gym. What it did for me, it gave me more hope. It strengthened my faith. I'm like, okay, I'm now looking forward to going to the gym. It wasn't a lot, man. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
I did like 5 minutes here, and then I did another 7 minutes the next day. And then I just did something to
2-pound dumbbells.
Yeah, man. Not even cables, like nothing. I was just like something. But then little by little, man, I got up to 140 pounds. And for me, that was a lot. And I was training normally. And I tell you, as a trainer, I never learned more than I did in those 5 months. I know more about the human body now than I ever did as a trainer. Because I had nothing. It was skin and bones. I had to start fresh. I had to find out where my weaknesses were, my strengths were, rehab, you know, all that stuff that I had learned. Now I had to put it all together. And then from there, it gave me a lot of strength. And then my December 31st of that year, 2006, was my final chemo. I came home on New Year's Eve, and I said a prayer. I said, God, no more chemo, please. And I woke up the next day.
That's the best prayer.
That was the best prayer. This year, let's finish it right here. 7 rounds of chemo, 98 chemotherapies total, 14 rounds per chemo, per round, 14 chemos per round. times seven. So the number seven is a big deal. July is my month. That's always been my month. But then the 98th chemo was, I'll never forget it. I was watching TBN on the
great channel.
I don't know why it was on, but it was on. and the funny, it's not, it really is funny to me that my best friend, Javen, who's my pastor, he was on TV. He did a movie called One Night with the King. It's a story of Esther.
I've seen it.
And it's one of my favorite movies because it talks about empowering women.
So, which we'll get to
which
soon.
Is what I do. So long story short, so James is on TV. My best friend's on TV on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day already. And long story short, I get through that. My surgery was February 1st. I worked out every day until my surgery. They told me I could die. My surgery lasted 12
hours. You were so at risk dying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So my surgery was February 1st of 2007, and they tell me everything that can go wrong with me. They removed the kidney, all the tumors. My intestines were cut. Everything was like, you have no idea. They did something in there, and they stapled me back together, and they just left me there until I could wake up. And then I woke up the next day looking at all these doctors in white robes, and when I finally was able to like really focus, I knew that there were doctors. I didn't know if they were angels. I didn't know what they were.
And all of a sudden, where am I?
Yeah. And Santiago, the first thing they did was, you got to get up. I'm like, you're kidding me. No, you got it. We got to get you up. You've been in bed too long. So after my surgery of 12 hours, I was in the operating room for 14 hours while they were testing all the stuff, make sure that it was no cancer left. And then they put me back together, put me in the room. I slept until the next day. So then when I woke up, everybody had to like literally help me get up, because if not, I would have had water in my lungs and it could have been worse.
Yeah.
So the first thing they had to do was, after I woke up, they were celebrating, but they were like, okay, now
get on the treadmill.
Now get up. Yeah. And my mother was the one that got the news that I was cancer free.
Oh my God.
And so that was the big thing for me. It was like, okay, my own mother was the one that, you know, gave me the news I was cancer-free. They couldn't find 1 ounce of cancer after all this. There was nothing left, you know. And yeah, I lost a kidney, and yes, I lost this, but you know what? I can go on healthy. I just got to take care of me, right?
Right.
And so that happened. And then the motivation was, okay, now I got to get back to doing what I loved.
But the doctors were surprised too, weren't they?
I'm a miracle walking.
Yeah, because I remember you were telling that story, and the doctors couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like you were...
They still can't believe it. 14 years later. Because one thing is to survive, and then to survive the way I have survived, the way I live my life.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting home in a bed. I'm not, you know, resting. Like, I live every day. Like, I'll travel, I'll speak, I'll host, I'll do whatever. You know, it's like, for me, every day is a gift. I'm going to live it to the fullest.
How many doctors worked with you?
So it was seven major doctors that were part, six or seven major doctors. I have to get the exact quote, but that were part of it. There was one guy that just literally stood there watching my oxygen level
all night
to make sure that I didn't go under, because I could have become a vegetable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then my surgeon was Dr. Kava, which I interviewed him. And I still keep in contact with him. We've collaborated in articles for the Miami Herald. We're going to do a lot more stuff together someday. Dr. Benedetto, he talks about me like it's, you know, he knows it's a miracle. He says in a video that my faith gave him faith.
Wow.
And that was the testimony that made me cry. I was on one of TV shows. They interviewed him, but I didn't know they were going to do it live while I was on the air.
I don't meet too many doctors get into their faith much.
They don't. And remember, I told him that he was God's instrument.
Right.
You know, I always compare it to being on death row. When the judge calls and says he's innocent, let him go. You know, don't kill him. And that's how I compare, you know, my experience. He called at the final hour.
Wow.
Remember, I'm already on morphine. It's already almost done.
Dave, when I hear morphine, because my grandma died too, when they give her morphine, that was like the last thing they give you and everything.
Everything about my story, my testimony, everything about my God story is, it's like extreme.
Right.
The chemo, the surgery, everything was so extreme, but it had to be extreme for me to do what I'm doing today.
That's a big motivator.
For me to be able to break through walls of people to not judge anyone, to love on everybody, to be able to listen to people's stories, to be an empath and be able to, you know, feel the empathy and the pain of the people and be able to take that in and be able to kind of help or guide in the process of healing.
Right.
If I don't go through what I go through, I can't do what I'm doing.
So after all that, did your, message changed completely? Like, you started speaking about that testimony. Before, it was just, you were just a host.
Yeah, I started getting back into speaking and sharing all that stuff after my surgery, after one surgery, yeah.
But your message now had more, like, more meaning.
Now it was chemo, surgery. It was a whole year out of my life. I got back in June. I worked out all through those months. And literally, I started in April, I think it was April, Easter, and I made a commitment that I was going to be, in June, I was going to host a show again. And I didn't skip a beat. In June, I was hosting a show at 152 pounds.
So you were gaming.
Yeah, my tuxedo was big, but I was on stage. I could barely walk the way I used to walk because I have neuropathy from the chemo, but I was on stage. And my voice was my voice. And now I had more passion because now it's like, now I was really, really, really enjoying the process. Mm-hmm. I was really taking, like, sometimes you go through life and you're not in the present. Now everything, I was in the present. I was like, I was experiencing every excitement, every scream from the audience, everything. When I got a chance to host Calle Ocho, what an 3 years in a row, that was an thousands and thousands of people and artists, and I'm hosting and I'm in front of these thousands of people for a whole day, and I lived it. I can still feel the experience.
How often do you pinch yourself, David?
Well, every day I wake up and I'm like, okay, I'm up, I can get up, I can walk, all right, let's go. And I just say, okay, I say, thank you, God, for another day. This is a gift, I'm gonna unwrap it. I'm excited to see what is this day gonna reveal to me. In other words, I look at every day as a revelation. I don't know. Each person that I meet is a revelation. Each thing that I do, or each project, or each event that I want to do, I feel like I need to do, then it's a revelation for me. And the other thing I say is, God, bring people into my life that I might become a blessing. And that's a daily prayer. So then, again, I'm here to serve. So, okay, bring people into my life that I can be a blessing. And then I'll text people, I'll reach out to people, and they're like, how did you know? I don't know, I just know God knows. I'm just being obedient. And that's one of my words. I always say, you know, you pray, you listen, you're obedient, and then you're consistent.
So after all that, obviously, you get invited to Steve Harvey's show, you go speak at TEDx, doors start to open.
Yeah. Well, the TEDx talk was interesting because I was in a speaker's bureau right after cancer. I was cleared of cancer on July 11th, 7/11/2007. I was cleared of cancer. And I'm celebrating my anniversary coming up. And we opened our gym, and then I ran the Gold's Gym. But at that moment, I started doing pageants. I started going back to fit. I went in August. I was on stage modeling. In August of 2007.
Yeah.
So literally a month later, I was modeling on stage doing a runway show in August of 2007. My father came, my mom came, everybody came. And from there, it just became, okay, I can go do everything that I love to do, but now I have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Now there is a message. It's not just about me being hyped up or me getting the crowd going. Now there is a message. And so I didn't skip a beat of what I love to do. It's what I always tell people. You'll get there. Just keep doing it. But now there's a purpose. Now there's a message behind it. And and that year taught me a lot. But I was in a speaker's bureau, started speaking. I created a speaker's bio. One of the seminars was Surviving Your Cancer. And the seminar wasn't about cancer, the disease. The seminar was about what in your life distracts you, destroys you, and takes your dreams away. Those are the three points that I talk about. Now, I've coached people all the time. I've been around people with addictions. I've been around people with dysmorphia. I've been around people that have been abused. All those things were coming to light now, which is what I do now with Women Empowerment, right? But that seminar was one of the most popular seminars. The other one was a miracle walking, training tools for fulfilling your purpose, be excited through your challenges, which is some of the seminars I talk about today. But one day I felt I'll be a TED Talk speaker because I watched all these amazing speakers. And every time an opportunity came, they canceled the event. And then I did a radio show on iHeartRadio for about a year and a half, 2 years. And in that one of the shows, I met this amazing woman that was a principal. And she was a guest, and I was sharing my story with her. And I was like, why am I driving all the way up here to do this radio show? You know, blah, blah, blah. I was like thinking about what was the purpose, even though I was sharing with people. She calls me years later, and she says, I've been looking for you. I've been wanting to ask you something. I'm putting together a TED Talk, and I want you to be the keynote. So I said, send me a title. And the first title was Surviving Your Cancer. And I knew that that message was so relevant in 2007, and I didn't know that, you know, over 10 years later, that that was going to be my TED Talk. And I know that eventually people will get to watch it, or people will get a chance to see it, or maybe when my career continues to grow, people will go back to that TED Talk because it's about them. It's about them defining in their life what is their cancer. So it's a message for everybody. If you had cancer, don't have cancer, don't know anything about cancer, it's okay. But we know what cancer does. So if you can compare something in your life, is it being in an abusive relationship, being an addict, being, you know, dealing with dysmorphia or body imaging issues or anorexia, bulimia, or whatever people are dealing with, what is your cancer? And then let's define it. Let's acknowledge it. The first thing about a challenge or a mountain, right, is acknowledging that there's a problem, and then let's work at it.
So you are hosting monthly women empowerment meetings. Tell us a little bit about that. How'd you get into that? And yeah.
So after I overcame cancer, my clients were coming up to me and telling me how I changed their life. And I was like, I didn't know that. I just thought I was training you to compete or training you to lose weight or training you to whatever. And they're like, no. You were training me, but you were also coaching me. You were also changing my lives. You were also listening. So I started recording what I did in my life. I recorded while I was at home during chemo and after my surgery. I started recording my life story, which is going to be in my book and my documentary. And as I watched it, I started defining a lot about my life. You know, was I confident? Was I conceited? Was I this? Was I that? Was I, you know, I started going through all these things about my life and defining them. And then I started coaching women. I started doing the same thing. I record a session. They get to watch themselves. It's almost like they're watching a mirror. They get to listen to their pain. They get to listen to what they've gone through. And what it does, something inside their brain starts clicking. I want to help this person. They don't see themselves anymore. Now they see someone they want to help, which is themselves. And the more you define yourself and the people around you, little by little, things start opening up. You start figuring out why you get upset, why you're triggered, why this, why that, all this stuff. Why you have these dreams? Why is something every day knocking on your door trying to get your attention? And you don't want to pay attention because you're so distracted with what? Society or the way people define you. So I did all these sessions. I got to the point where my hard drive was full. And I found out I had coached over 100 women one-on-one. So my mom's a psychologist. She's got a PhD doctor from Ohio State University. Go Buckeyes. And she ends up, I learned a lot. I always listen to my mom, even though she thinks I don't, I do. But I had a minor in psychology. But then what happened was I started literally taking all this information, and something tells me, listen to them all over again. So I spent 3 months listening to over 1,000 hours of testimonials, basically. And when I say this all the time, but I really mean it, I cried more in 3 months than I cried during 3 years of cancer. Between my two battles, I can tell you the times that I cried, but I cried more in 3 months because it was a daily pain that I was feeling. It's like, what a privilege I have to be trusted with someone's story that they never shared. So I started writing. And then I wrote what's called Empowering Women in a Now series. And that series was defining you and those around you, training tools for fulfilling your life purpose, be excited through your challenges, and release the greatness inside of you. So it's basically you, step by step, getting to purpose. But it takes those things to do. First, you got to define it. Then you got to remember what are your gifts and talents. You got to find out what they are. And then your challenges are going to come. You got to be excited to your challenges because they're going to do what? They're going to test you. And you're going to grow from it. And then release the grace inside of you is when you have all that, now let's just go out into the world and put it out there. So that has been a life-changing experience for me. Just like cancer was, coaching now almost 300 women. I have over 3 terabytes of information, of stories. I already done over 25 seminars. Last year I did my first full-day conference. I did 2 of them. This year I'm getting ready to do my full conference again, a one-day conference. All 4 seminars, multiple speakers, and it's just basically breakthrough sessions, you know?
That's something that's, a lot of women like it to get into, like, the personal coaching stuff a lot more than men does, which is unfortunate. Tell us about your speaker coach.
Program?
So.
So basically, I have to be your life coach first.
Okay.
I have to know your story. So from there, a lot of my clients go into 2 categories. Either they go life coaching into business coaching because they want to create a business where they can help others through their service or products. And then the next one is going to be speakers coaching. So I have speakers that are very polished, but they don't share their story. And that's what I help them do to make an impact. Everything that I went through is to what? To share.
Yeah.
That's why I always tell people, if you go through something, it's for you to share. It's not for you to keep it to yourself. It's just, that's not for it. So yeah. If you go through something, share it. If you go through an experience, share it. Now, not everybody's going to do what I do, and that's okay. Maybe you have a one-on-one. Maybe you do it through a Facebook group. Maybe you do it through maybe just your coworkers.
Right.
You know, or a little study at home, you know. Everybody has their own purpose, you know. So I would say don't compare yourself to me. Don't compare your story to me. Just do what you're supposed to do. Learn your story and it'll reveal your purpose. It always does.
If you had to tell someone that is going through almost 0 hope, maybe 1% hope, what would you tell that person?
I always say that you find hope through a story. So you're either going to get it through, maybe I'm not the one. Maybe you have to find somebody. That's why when people say to me, my story, I don't have a story. Maybe it was just a bad marriage. Maybe it was just a divorce. Maybe it was just work. Maybe it's with some people, it's just a disability. And they don't share their story. And someone needs to hear it. And that's why I said, you're supposed to be a miracle in someone's life today. So you're supposed to share your story, even if you think it's as dumb as it is, or you don't really see the credibility in it, or you don't see the power behind it, it's still yours, and it means something. If not, why is it so difficult for you to overcome it? So when you do that, you share that story, and someone is going to tag along and listen to it through a podcast like yours. God only knows who's going to be listening to it. But if one person gets this message and finds hope in it, we did our job today. So the goal is that you have to go, like with Google now, you can Google anything you're going through and you're going to see plenty of people that are talking about it. And hopefully you'll find some instrument or some vessel that's going to share what you're going through to let you know that it's okay not to be okay.
Dave, wow, what a moment. Action-packed in less than an hour. Do you have anything else you want to share before we land this plane?
You know, the biggest thing is that I am very blessed to be alive. I feel like every day is a gift. I'm looking forward to celebrating another year of life, my birthday and my anniversary. And I just hope that anyone that ever gets to know me or gets to know anything about me is because something impacts their life. I just want to be a life changer. So everything about my life is life changer. I created a nonprofit for children with cancer that I launched, but a lot of people don't know about it. I haven't really been able to do too many events, but it's called Life Changes for Life. And you know, if anyone wants to support, you know, kids with cancer, children battling cancer, emotionally and financial help. So I want to create events for children. I want to do things for kids. I also want to, you know, provide financial help to kids and their families, because families also suffer when a kid is suffering, a child is suffering the cancer, their family is suffering with them. So that is one of my dreams, is to have multiple companies that are able to support it financially every year. So if the time comes that I'm called to heaven and my job here is done, that the foundation can run itself and every year have fashion shows, concerts, and events, all the events that I do to support the foundation. And of course, all the events that I do already support my nonprofit. I'll take a percentage of it and put it into that as well.
What is the best way for people to reach you online, to use your services, or to find out more about the women empowerment events?
Yeah, right now, the conference is always as mypurpose2021.life. mypurpose2021.life or mypurpose2021.com. You can get there. But my website is davidgandel360.com. davidgandel360. And that 360 site, basically, there's videos, TV shows that I've done. All my social media stuff is on that 360 site. That's why it's the 360. You get everything. So David Gandel 360. I didn't want to do David Octavius too long.
I love that name, by the way.
Yeah, great. But for that one, I was like, it's too long. But David Gandel 360. But, you know, I just think that right now we're living in a time that I never really expected to live, where a lot of people are angry and they don't know why. You know, they're blaming things or situations or other people, and they're angry. And I come across this every day, and I was like, why? This person or this situation or this is going on in the world. I said, why are you angry? Well, I told you this thing. I said, no, hold on. Why are you angry? In other words, something is going on in your life that you haven't defined yet. In other words, you're not happy. There's something that you're not doing that gives you joy every day. So then you're allowing circumstances, society, influencers or social media or whatever it is to dictate your anger. You know, and I'm not saying anger is bad. Sometimes you need to get anger to get up, right? A lot of people are not even getting up out of bed, Santiago. When I started my show, Life Changes for Life, the TV show, I started it because a lot of my friends couldn't get out of bed. They were so depressed during the pandemic, they didn't know what to do with their life. So I said, I'm going to do this show. I'm going to interview all kinds of people, and I'm going to give one word that's going to give hope to others. And that was the concept of the show. Testimony, faith, and one word that gives people hope every day to keep going. Because these are all stories. I did 60 of them through the pandemic. And I tell you, a lot of people were thankful for that one little show, 15, 20 minutes a day or whatever it was. But a lot of people right now aren't even getting out of the house. They're not getting out of bed. Even though the world is getting back to some kind of normalcy, they don't know who they are anymore.
Yeah, one part of your story that really caught my attention was that time when you were in between the procedures, that you went out, hey, let me go to the gym. You were stepping out in faith. Would you say the same for a person that wants to start that business?
Yeah. What do you have to lose? if you fail, well, you fail if you don't try. I'm not going to give you a whole thing about fear of failure, fear of success. That's another seminar. But, and I've talked about it. All your categories go into one or the other. Fear of failure, fear of success. You know, yeah. I think we all have some type of fear, because remember, fear is just your brain telling you that your brain doesn't understand. Right. So your brain doesn't understand what that business is like because you've never done it. Your brain doesn't understand what going out with a girl that you like is like because you've never done it. So your brain still is protecting you from yourself, but that is a limitation that you put on yourself. In other words, that is something you've actually acquired, because as a child, we have none of these fears. So what happens is we listen to somebody, and that is what gives us limitations.
Tell us about your book that you're writing. You don't have a book right now.
So I have a workbook. Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's called Don't Dream Your Life, Live Your Dreams. It's a breakthrough book. I call it the Women's Breakthrough Book, but a guy can read it as well.
Okay.
It's basically you doing your own life coaching. It's literally going through the questions that I go through in my seminars, in my masterminds, in my thing. So if you don't want to come to me, that's fine. Get the book on Amazon, it's fine. And work. It's a workbook, though. It's not a book. It's for you to work on yourself.
I like that. It's like a children's book. You just write down the
And I'm turning answer. It into a children's workbook as well, because a lot of the principals that I've met or owners of schools want to turn this into a course. Mm-hmm. Because it gives kids a dream again, to keep dreaming, to keep believing in their dream. So that's going to be turned into a workbook for kids. I'm just changing some of the wording mm-hmm. to make sure that the children can understand it from middle schools to high schools. And that's going to be out this year.
Awesome. And any future book?
Yeah, so the book Cancer Was a Blessing, I have a literary agent who is helping me with that book. And I hope that book is out in a year or so. I still have a lot of work to do on it. And I feel the reason it hasn't come out is because, like I said, God's got perfect timing.
Yes.
And I think he's doing some things in my life right now that need to be in that book as well.
And I hope you make an audio version.
Yeah, the audio version is going to have to be there because I'm too charismatic not to do it.
It's funny because most...
I'm too emotional not to do it.
It's funny because most authors, when they do an audio book, they add stuff to it.
Yeah.
Like, they add more emotion, they add some more... Well, I'm actually going to add on to the sentence because it's, you know, very powerful.
Yeah, because you're in the moment. And you're actually telling it, and then the emotions come in. You know, I've listened to a lot of great, I'm not going to, give a lot of speakers, but I have a lot of people that I believe are influences in my life, because we all need someone to look up to, or we all need someone to push us or challenge us. All of us do. You know, for me, it's always about making my mom and my dad proud. My dad's in heaven now, but I always hope that he's listening, he's watching, and he's proud of what I'm doing, because I've sacrificed too much already to not, you know, this is a long journey, man. This is not an easy journey, what I do every day. And people are like, why don't I could do anything I want. I have my degrees, I have my education, I have my experience. But what I choose to do is sacrificial every day. In other words, to be a life coach and to speak and to tell my story every day is a sacrifice.
Should a person plan out their life like years ahead, or do you think they should just do it in small increments?
I think everybody's different. I try to answer that question. That's a good question. I'm
People
not a planner.
Like 5 years.
I'm not a planner time. Because I don't know if I'm going to be here. But that's my story, and I always tell people don't compare. If you're a planner, that's a gift. Maybe that's your gift. You plan it, and then that's what gives you hope. Is your plan? For me, I have all these amazing events, but I focus on what's here now. I focus on what's next. And then I keep watering the other dreams. I keep watering. Now, if you talk to my friends, they'll tell you, David wants to do this. I've shared some of my God-sized dreams with people, but I don't have a timeline. I just believe they're going to happen, but I think that it's all, I'm climbing. I'm always climbing. But I don't want to share. I don't think that comparing is the one thing. I think people compare themselves. The one thing I do say is every day live it like it's your last. Make the best of it. Be present. If you're on a dinner table with your family, tell them you love them. Be present. You know, I understand the cell phones. I get that. Everybody has that. And I'm not going to tell you to disconnect your phone. No, it's not what I'm going to do. I mean, we're on social media right now.
In the car.
Yeah. But what I'm saying to you is be present. In other words, even if it's for 1 minute to acknowledge that people are around you, be present in that. And if you're doing something you enjoy, like hosting or speaking or a podcast. A lot of people are doing this now. Be present. Just enjoy now. Stop thinking about what's going to happen after. Just enjoy the process, man. That's the thing about my cancer story. Now I can enjoy the process, because by going through the process, I feel like there's other things that are challenging me right now that I can go through that process and say I can overcome them.
You look at life way different than prime majority of people.
I'm living a bonus life. I'm saying it. I say this every day.
No, you have a different, like, goggles on.
Every day.
Like, people want things now. Now, mm-hmm. I say, this is interesting, because this week, actually, or maybe last week, I've been having this new phrase, turtle speed. Take it.
It's a marathon.
Yeah, it's a marathon.
Yeah, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
You don't want to be that hair rabbit. You know, trying to rush it. No, turtle speed or Godspeed.
Correct. But here's the thing. I want to make sure I'm all about defining. Everything about do is I want to break it down and define. You need to define your words also in your language.
Right.
Like a word like obedience, for example, to a lot of people is a trigger. But for me, I try to define it for them to let them know what I mean by obedience. But for a lot of people, it's a bad thing, it's a negative thing. So when you say like speed and turtle speed or life is a marathon, life is a marathon. Mm-hmm. But is the marathon a 5 mile or a 50 mile? Because yeah. you can finish 5 miles in an hour. Right. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. But my, I guess the definition I share is whatever you're meant to do today, do it today. Don't put it till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. When I was managing health clubs, there was two exercises I used to do for my salespeople and my staff. A to-do list. Everybody has a to-do list every day. You have to be accountable. Some people will start with the heavy stuff, with the stuff that would take longer, and some people will start with the easy things. Because some of us need a little bit of a push, momentum. So I'm gonna start with the little things. Brush my teeth, get ready, get my breakfast ready, take my protein shake, blah, 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 get in my car. Those accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Because you gotta remember, to a lot of people, getting out of bed is an accomplishment. That's the thing, you have to define it. I break things down to the core. So, okay.
Dude, I'm the same way.
I'm doing all these things.
Like doing my bed is the first task I gotta do.
There you go. And then, is that a bad thing if you don't do your bed? No, it isn't. But yeah. for some people, my dad, for example, my mom, example, military people, dress the bed. Then go out and do everything else. So I get it. But why? Because consistency. You do something so consistent. Yeah. You break the habit and you do something better. But what I mean is, be present in that moment, is do what you can do today. And what you can't do, it's okay. But if you have something to do today, finish it. And that is what I mean by that. In other words, because if you plan too much and you do too much, you get overwhelmed, you don't do anything.
David Octavio Gundel, wow. This is, I'm definitely looking at life a little bit way different. You definitely inspired me. And I'm sure going to inspire like the listeners in this show. Glad you came. Any closing words before we sign off and...
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity. I know we've only met a few times. I appreciate you wanting to share this with your audience. I'm glad I was able to share this moment with you guys, and I'll make sure I'm going to be putting
Leon Productions
on the screen. You guys can because this guy has a lot of businesses that he does as well, not just in Weston, but in South Florida. So I'm very grateful always for anyone that gives me, that shares their platform with me. That is always a blessing and is a privilege. So thank you for that. My message is very simple. Find hope, have faith, and live every day with purpose. And then I added a few years ago when I did the seminar, my speech in 2019, find a way to be a miracle in someone's life today. Even if it's texting somebody, calling somebody, sending flowers, sending a note, a gift, whatever it is, be a miracle in someone's life today. So find hope. How do you find hope? Through people's stories. How do you have faith? Through actually the process. The process builds the faith. And living with purpose is something that's bigger than yours.
David Octavio Gundel, I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you, sir. God bless you guys.